Okay, welcome back to the afternoon BRS afternoon Kollel. Want to thank the Froelich Financial Group, as always, for their generous sponsorship. And this week's generous sponsor is Phil and Peggy Zimmerman, in memory of Michal Ben Shraga Faival HaLevi, whose neshama should have an aliyah. Also, one of our attendees, so I don't have a copy, Lee can make more from. One of our attendees is currently in the hospital, Marvin Hirshhorn, and our learning should be for a refuah shlema, speedy and painless recovery for him, Moshe Nassan Ben Chaya. We began last week this topic, hopefully we'll finish this week, the question of wearing yarmulkes in the workplace. There's actually a much bigger and broader discussion to be had about yarmulkes. I have other source sheets, maybe we'll continue another time, that track different svarim through the ages, and the machaber, the author of those svarim, you'll be very fascinated and maybe even surprised to see that wearing a yarmulke was not as pervasive, was not as a given as it is for us today. So last week, just to catch us up in a quick overview, we saw the origin of the word yarmulke. Maybe it comes from the Turkish. Maybe it comes, the etymology is Yare Malka, the fear of the Melech of King. We saw three Gemaras. The Gemara in Kedushin talked that Rav Huna wouldn't walk four amos without covering his head. The Gemara in Shabbos told us the reward for never walking four amos without covering his head. And we saw that Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's mother saw that he was born under the astrological sign that he was predisposed to be a thief, to be a ganav, and therefore he needed even extra effort, mindfulness or consciousness to remember that there's something above him. So all three of these Gemaras suggest that the goal of a yarmulke is to one feels the weight of the yarmulke quite literally on our head. And when you feel the weight of the yarmulke on your head, then you feel you're reminded. We don't tie a little string around our finger to remember, put a yarmulke on our head to remember that there is a heaven above us, that we have a sense of Yira Shemayim, we have a sense of awe of heaven. Fascinating, by the way, just as an aside, we use colloquially the terms Avas Hashem. We talk about loving God, but Yira Shemayim. It's an inconsistency. Why don't we call it Avas Shemayim and Yira Shemayim, or Avas Hashem and Yira Hashem? Why do we say Avas Hashem, but Yira Shemayim? I believe it was Rabbi Soloveitchik who suggested, because Ava is supposed to connote a sense of closeness, of affection, of intimacy. We have a not a casual Chas V'Shalom relationship, but we have an accessible relationship to Hashem. So we're on a basis of comfort. It's Avas Hashem. But Yira Shemayim is supposed to instill a sense of awe, a sense of reverence, a sense of understanding the distance between us and Him. And therefore, it's not Yiras Hashem, we're not on our first name basis, but it's Yira Shemayim. Shemayim, the heavens are far off. The heavens connote a sense of majesty and inaccessibility and so on. That's why it's Avas Hashem and Yira Shemayim. So the yarmulke helps promote a sense of Yira Shemayim. The yarmulke is not there to create the Ava, the love. The yarmulke sets the boundary. That when we overstep the feeling of love and we have too casual a relationship with Hashem, the yarmulke kicks in and remembers that there are boundaries, there are responsibilities, there are expectations that He has for us. We'll get up to in Siddur snippets. We're not there yet. We'll get up to, hopefully, sometime in my lifetime. But we'll get up to Tachanun. And Tachanun, if you understand, Tachanun is a very fascinating tefillah. Right after the Amidah, all of a sudden we sit down, we fall on our arm, and all of a sudden we are unworthy, and we review and introspect and reflect on all of our inadequacies. And if you look at the halacha, when the halacha says you're not allowed to talk from Baruch Sha'amar or Birchas Kriyashma through the end of Tachanun. Tachanun is a unit that goes with the Amidah. Why is it a unit that goes with the Amidah? Again, we'll get to this more in Siddur snippets eventually, because the Amidah is a casual relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. I step up and I say, Baruch Atachonin, Atakadosh, Atrufein. I'm telling Kodesh Baruch Hu what to do. Baruch Aleinu, Rifa'inu. I'm demanding, I'm asking, I'm talking casually, I'm talking in a comfortable first-person way to Kodesh Baruch Hu. I'm telling him what he should do. After that exchange, all of a sudden I recoil with a sense of humility and a sense of awe and a sense of reverence, and I say, wow, I've just had an audience with the King of Kings. And we fall on our arm with a sense of tachanun, which is the counterbalance to the casual attitude that we brought to the Amidah. So the Yarmulke, these three Gemaras in Kedushin and two Gemaras in Shabbos depict or connote this sense of increasing, promoting our Yir Shemayim. But we pointed out that they see it as Amidah's Chasidus. It's a nice idea. Rav Huna, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's mother, encouraged him. It's a nice idea. Why? Why should one wear the yarmulke? The Levush talked about an awareness of Hashem above. The Maharsha talked about respect and subordination. The weight, we feel the weight, that we work for God, God doesn't work for us. And then we saw, which was a big chiddush, Lev Avram, Rav Avram Weinfeld, who's a big Talmud Chacham in Rosh Kol today, talked about that wearing a yarmulke is in fact maybe a Doraisa, because it's a fulfillment of Yiras Shamayim. Whatever contributes to Yiras Shamayim, which is somewhat subjectively defined to each time and each place, each generation, whatever will contribute, however we will somehow capture the definition of Yiras Shamayim, it becomes something which maybe is even of a higher order, maybe even has a De'araisa component to it. We talked about the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Balatanya, that the yarmulke represents the modesty of the intellect. What the clothing is for the body, the yarmulke is for the mind. It's a sense of modesty. It's a sense that we don't have the ability to just express ourselves freely, unrestrictedly, however we want. What is it, a law or a custom? So the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Alter Rebbe, said it began as a positive custom, Amidas Chasidus. Today, it's become the halacha. Since it's become so universally adopted, we're getting more copies, we're getting more. Since it's become so universally adopted, it's become the halacha. The Marshal disagreed. The Marshal was adamant. We saw the very strong language of the Marshal of Rav Shlomo Luria, that you can make a bracha, that you can daven without a yarmulke. It's a nice thing, and for a Talmud Chacham, it would look like incorrect to not wear a yarmulke, but, strictly speaking, even to daven, even to make a bracha. The Vilna Gaon, you're not even obligated to wear a yarmulke while you daven. However, today it's evolved for several factors, which we began to discuss, one of which was Chukas Ha'akum. The non-Jewish practice, the Gentile practice, the practice of other religions is when they walk into their religious institutions, religiously they take their head covering off. It would be inappropriate to wear a head covering in their religious setting. So to have a head uncovered is not just a failure to fulfill a Midas Chasidus, a nice idea. To have a head uncovered might in fact be a Gentile practice, not only in a religious context for a Jew, but in any context. So therefore, perhaps it's not just a consideration of a yarmulke in a vacuum, but it's a consideration of a yarmulke in the context of Chukas Ha'akum. Does it emulate, is it in some ways following what is a non-Jewish custom? What is the minimum size of a yarmulke? Rav Avadya said it has to be seen on all four sides. Rav Moshe said it should be something that covers the majority of the head. What about a yarmulke at work? We saw the Mari Bruno said it's an issue of Chukas Akum. The Maram Brisk, it began as a Midas Chasidim. Today it's Daraisa because of Chukas Akum. We saw the story of the Ber Moshe last week. He met with that couple and the wife accused the husband. You know how you know that I'm more believable than you? The husband and wife were debating over a certain conflict in their marriage, and each portrayed a different story towards the Rav they met with, towards the Ber Moshe. And she suddenly bursts out, "You have no ne'amanus, you're not trustworthy. You're such a shagetz, you sit in your recliner every night, you take your yarmulke off, and you read the paper. And you sit there with no yarmulke." And he was so startled by the confrontation with the fact that it's true, he takes his yarmulke off when he sits in his recliner chair, that he admitted to her, "You're right. And I'm wrong." And they went home and they made up and they lived together happily ever after. The yarmulke is a skula for shalom bayis. Good. This brings us up to the Minchas Yitzchak. Source number 15. I believe that's what we were up to. Page 13, source 15. And the Minchas Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss, says a tshuva, and he says the following. I think we saw this at the end last time. He said, our poskim have investigated this issue. And look there at the Taz. And so on. So Rav Yitzchak Yaakov Weiss, the great Dayan of Yerushalayim, the Minchas Yitzchak says, you cannot give a hard and fast rule about a yarmulke. To say it is definitionally obligated today, to say that it is Chukas Akam Natu, it all depends where you are, the time and the place that you're living, what is the custom among the Jewish community, what are the consequences of wearing a yarmulke, what are the consequences about not wearing a yarmulke, how much in fact is it a religious statement to take a yarmulke off. And I go full circle to what I began with the last time, which is that probably in many of your generation, people didn't wear a yarmulke to work. It wasn't safe. And it didn't provide the opportunity, and you couldn't maintain your parnasa. And then for my generation, it was a no-brainer. There's almost no area of work that you can't be an observant Jew and reach the highest offices in the land, reach the highest opportunities in the land, and so on. Who knows about the next generation, as we're seeing the proliferation of anti-Semitism and Jews who are being attacked in such non-obscure places, Brooklyn and Muncie, and places you would never think that Jews would be made to feel uncomfortable walking in the street. Certainly if you live in Europe, you're going to go with a hat on. So a Jew living in Europe today, in certain places in Europe, to go to work with a yarmulke might not only set them back professionally, might set them back in terms of safety and security. So Dayan Weiss says the Minchas Yitzchak, and I think very accurately, correctly, not that he needs my endorsement or Chalila, I would disagree with the others. And this was written in England in 1965. But he says, each place and each time is different and needs to be evaluated. What are the considerations and variables? How do you determine what the halacha is in each place and each time? If you would have asked 50 years ago, you would have gotten one answer in America about the permissibility of not wearing a yarmulke to work. If you would ask 15, 20 years ago, you'd get a different answer. And if you'd ask in 10 and 15 years from now, we don't know what the answer you would get. And therefore, says the Minchas Yitzchak, on this particular halachic question, one cannot give a hard and fast rule. Rav Moshe also weighs in, source 16, and Rav Moshe has a series of tshuvas we'll try to look at a little bit. And he says the following, Im mutar leilech begilei rosh l'tzarech parnasaso, Rav Moshe says, can you go with your head uncovered for the purpose of making a living? Hinei bedavar shetzarech lahasig misra shetzarech leipagesh im bali ha-misrat she'omer lo shetzarech sham lahorid kovo me'ar sho, v'leisha begilei rosh b'lo kipa shekorin yarmulke, and v'yilba sham kipa lo yikablu la'avod ha-sham. A person applies for a position, and he's told, if we accept you, if you receive this position, you cannot sit here with a yarmulke. If you wear a yarmulke, you cannot have this job. V'meshtadal avuro omer, So the circumstances were such that there was transparency in advance. You will not be able to have this job. You won't be able to thrive in this job if you wear a yarmulke to work. And the question was posed to Rav Moshe, is it permissible to take a yarmulke off for going to work? So Moshe quickly, succinctly reviews the sources and says, we know that the origin of the yarmulke, though we take it today for granted, we use it today as the definition of an observant Jew. Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Kashrus, do you wear a yarmulke? We use it definitionally today. But says Rav Moshe, that wasn't always the case. It began as a Midas Chasidus. And we already established, and he's reviewed, that for the Vilna Gaon, Trumas Adeshin and others, Marshal, and it's unimaginable. Even those who went to work without a yarmulke here, what did you do when you had to have lunch? What did you do when you went to the water cooler? You wanted a cup of coffee. So did you put something on your head to make the bracha? Did you have the yarmulke in your pocket? You snuck it on your head. Did you go out to the car to eat lunch so you could put the yarmulke on? Did you take your sleeve over your hand and put it on your head to make the bracha? So we mistakenly think that it is absolutely categorically forbidden to eat without a yarmulke. Certainly it's forbidden to make a bracha without a yarmulke. But, and I'm not here to endorse, I'm not in a campaign to get rid of the yarmulke. Please understand, stay till the end of this year. But we have to know the halacha. We have to know what's Taraisa, what's the Rabbanan, what's Minag, what's Midas Chasidus. You can't live as a Jew, a knowledgeable Jew, without knowing what category our practices fit in. It's one of my personal pet peeves, because we're seeing a challenge in our time where people have no sense of a context. They don't have a strong enough background. Especially sometimes someone's on a track or trajectory to be a Baal Tshuva, which is so admirable and so beautiful, but it lacks context. So I'll never forget, there are people I've encountered. There are women who are not Shomer Shabbos or Shomer Kashrus, but when we had our son, they'll say, he didn't have an upshare? Like, not having an up? What are you, Michal Shabbos Befarhesia? You didn't give him an upshare? You cut his hair before he was three? What kind of shegetz are you, Rabbi? They don't keep Shabbos, keep kosher, taras and mishpacha, mikvah. But some people, depending on a background, might think that an upshare is a dindo, rice, that's yarek v'al yavor, you have to give your life. It's very, very important to know in halacha what categories things fit in, to know the background, the development of the halacha, and to know where the halacha. Not so that we can dismiss or not observe what we would consider lower levels, but just so that we can be knowledgeable. So Rav Moshe says towards that end that to begin this conversation, in order to evaluate the question of can you go to work without a yarmulke, you need to know that the Marshal, the Gon, these are not graduates of Yeshiva University, modern thinkers. We're talking about the backbone and foundation of the development of halacha. You're talking about Rav Shlomo Luria, you're talking about the Vilna Gon, you're talking about the Taz, you're talking about the Dachi Moshe. They all say that wearing a yarmulke me'ikra din is midas chasid. Strictly speaking, it's only something which is a pious thing to do, and you could even make a bracha, and you could eat with your head uncovered. We know the halacha is how much do you have to lose in order to observe a mitzvah? So the halacha, the Gemara says, that if you have to spend money to fulfill a mitzvah, so you need a lulav and esrog, but you have limited finances. So what percentage of your savings do you need to spend in order to fulfill dalad minim? What percentage of your savings do you have to spend to buy a menorah and fulfill Chanukah licht? What percentage of your savings do you have to spend to observe whatever mitzvah it is? So the Gemara has a principle, and we quote this lahalach and siman tafresh nun vav, that ayivazve is yosher mechomash. You don't have to spend more than 20%. You don't spend more than 20%. In the effort, it's a different calculation for a lav. In order to not violate a prohibition, you have to lose your life savings. But in order to observe a positive commandment, you don't spend more than 20% of your income or of your savings. So says Rav Moshe, if in order to fulfill an actual mitzvah saseh, a positive Torah commandment, you don't have to spend more than 20% of chomesh, then in order to observe a midas chasidus of wearing a yarmulke, you don't have to lose a hefsed meruba, not 20% of your income, but 100% of your income. This is a gadol, this is a posek, this is how he calculates. True, he says, today it's become the universal practice. Kvar inhigu, because chol Yisrael lo gar minag Yisrael kadoshim. This is a minag Yisrael of our kadoshim, our holy Jewish people, that men all universally wear a yarmulke. But if to fulfill an actual mitzvah, you don't have to spend more than 20%, to fulfill midas chasidus of wearing a yarmulke, you don't have to lose 100%. That's called the hefsed meruba. So wearing a yarmulke is not even a derabanan. It certainly doesn't rise to a deraisa, unless you're going to use Rav Weinfeld's calculation and say that the yarmulke is part of your Hashemayim, so it's a din deraisa. But if you're not going to use his calculation, it's not even a din derabanan. You don't have to give up the opportunity to have a job. You don't have to lose 100% of potential income in order to observe a midas chasidus. Aval shitas atasham dike iser b'mekom haseinu shuchuk akum. Says Rav Moshe, that's all well and good if all we're talking about is the yarmulke as a midas chasidus, a nice practice. But what about this other consideration or variable that walking around with your head uncovered is now a Gentile customer practice and should be biblically prohibited because it's chukas ha'akum, chukoseim lo seilechu, in kenu lav, sheonis mamon eina onis, shemina roi lahachmer kamosa, afsha pligia lav, ta'atayim u'tam gadol. He says, so when it comes to a lav, chukoseim lo seilechu, you don't have to lose 20%, you have to lose 100%. You have to be willing to lose 100% of your money in order not to violate a negative prohibition. So if it's the positive practice of midas chasidus, you don't have to lose your parnasa. But if it's a violation of a negative prohibition of chukoseim lo seilechu, maybe you have to be willing to forfeit your entire parnasa. So he says that not everybody agrees with the Taz. Vayim begos Rav Moshe, shadachakti b'tam ha-magin Avram, mikomokum b'mokum hefzad godo, kaze yesh lasmoch alayu. V'prapa min yinasinu b'zman hazeh, shabor shalom mitzad chukoseim osum zeh, elu mishum d'chein nokel lehu yoser. Gentiles who walk around with their head uncovered are not making a religious statement. They're doing it out of convenience because their normative practice is not to wear something on their head. Even observant Jews who wear a hat outside because it's cold, the moment they walk into their house, nobody walks around their house. I don't care how far from you are. The frumer you are, so frum, you still don't walk around and sit around your house with a hat on your head. People sit. Even the halakha pictures of Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shlita, sitting and learning, that appear in all the magazines to promote you'll get a skula. If you look at his picture, I'm trying to remember even seeing a picture of Rav Chaim with a hat on. All the pictures, he's learning 24/7. All the pictures are in house learning. He sits comfortably with his head uncovered. Not uncovered, without a hat. So says Rav Moshe, even observant Torah Jews walk into a house, they take off the hat, and they put on a yarmulke. Im kein vanda beshvil zeh gam nachher ben hochem bekovem kisham b'chutz, vav keshekar b'chutz, umuchrochem lelech bekovem b'chutz, keshebon abaisa poshtan hakovem, v'kevim shem enam tzrichan lelech b'kisei rosh, yashem b'gilei rosh. So we and the non-Jew both walk into our house and take off our hat. It happens to be we put on a yarmulke, because we think it's wrong to walk around brazenly and boldly with your head uncovered. They don't wear a yarmulke, not because they're making a religious statement to be bareheaded, but because they've taken the hat off, because now they're inside where it's comfortable. Says Rav Moshe, today there is no chukoseim issue. We're not flirting with a lav, which would require us to forfeit our total income, and therefore we're only trying to promote the observance of a positive midas chasidus, and therefore you're not obligated to forfeit an income for it. And Rav Moshe says, if going to work, the only way you'll get that job, the only way you can bring in that income is by having your head uncovered. The Bir Moshe was machmir. The Bitzin was machmir. He said, better not have the job, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will find you another job. And he told us the story of someone he told that to, and Hashem found him a better job, where he could wear the yarmulke and he made more money. There were generations of people who couldn't ain sumchan al hanis. You couldn't rely on that miracle. So Rav Moshe is there for those who can't rely on that miracle. And Rav Moshe says, if it's going to cause you to lose your job or your income, if you have to wear a yarmulke, then the Taz is not correct in our time, the Magen Avraham is. It's not b'chukosayim lo say lechu, it's not a lav, it's an asay. It's an asay of midas chasidus, not even derabanan. And therefore, you're not obligated to experience or sustain a hefsed merubah.
Isn't there a difference between not wearing it and somebody telling you you cannot? That's more like a chilal Hashem already, if you listen to him.
Okay, good. Phil's asking a good question. Maybe if the person says, I'll only give you the job if you're bareheaded, so now is an aspect of a chilal Hashem. Now there's religious coercion, so to say. So maybe al tzkiddush Hashem, you should give up that job and find another. I think if you look at the tshuva again, I think the questioner wasn't saying, we can't have a religious, observant, Orthodox Jew here. You have to take your yarmulke off. It was that in our workplace, we have certain standards, and one of them is that heads are bare. We have bare heads here. So I don't think it was, you have to take your yarmulke off for religious reasons. I think it was conforming issues. Now, Rav Moshe adds in Source 17, this is another tshuva. That last tshuva was in Or Chaim Chelek Dalet. This is in Choshen Mishpat Chelek Aleph. Rav Moshe reiterates his psak, and he says it's obvious, and now it's clear. The same calculation we just read. We have issues of chukoseim and so on. You don't have to worry about that. But now get to the last paragraph. And what about, I'm sorry, go back a sentence. I wanted to go back one more sentence. About Vada, you see where the period is? Source 17, page 14, where the period is. Rak b'makam avodaso sha'azehi makpidim yerashai. Aval kashu yetzi l'cheder acher, koshken kashu yetzi l'shuk, ye'asar afim yaligo alav kevin shal yasim mishasov avodaso b'shvil zeh. He says, it's at work where you risk losing your job or not being hired if we're a yarmulke. But to work and from work, and if work has after hours, you're going out to Starbucks, and there they don't have a right to tell you what to wear on your head. So then, even if you will be made fun of, even if they'll mock you for wearing a yarmulke, but it won't cost you your job, you have to wear a yarmulke. So the license to not wear a yarmulke, the standard, the threshold, is not that you'll be embarrassed. We daven every day, Kodesh Baruch Hu, we are embarrassed in your service, we welcome that. And to be embarrassed in the service of Hashem is something, we have to be comfortable being uncomfortable in that way. So the fact that somebody's trying to shame us, that's not enough of a reason to take a yarmulke off. If it's a threat to your safety or security, or if it's a threat to your parnasa, which is your safety and security, then Rav Moshe would be matir. But on the way to work and on the way from work, then you have to put that yarmulke on right away. And then he addresses at the end, what about shaving? What if at work they say during the 3 weeks that you can't grow that scruffy beard? Again, everything changes with time. Today, being not shaven is almost like a standard. If you shave, there's something wrong with you. Today, even in hedge funds and financial sector and legal practices, it's an in look to look scruffy. So today's day and age, certainly one shouldn't shave in the 3 weeks. But Moshe was talking about in a time that if you worked in a certain setting, a certain professional setting, you couldn't come in not shaven. So he says, if that will cost you your work, then you're allowed to shave. If they'll just comment or mock you for not shaving, that's not enough of a heter to shave. But if it will cost you parnasa, then you'd be allowed to shave. Rav Moshe has a third tshuva, and this is in Yoredeya. So we've seen Or HaChaim, this was in Choshen Mishpat, and this third tshuva is in Yoredeya Chelik Dalad, source 18, page 14. And here he says the following, again the same, he's addressing the same issue. What? He's addressing the same issue. Poshel ani az daiti. Tav mashu vaday nachshav chok ha'akom. Im hu davar shechazinu she'osin kein kulei amon nachrim. Kam eila shloshai chiklalu munasum nechukoseyem. We see all non-Jews walk around bareheaded. The percentage of our country, which is only growing and increasing, religion is on the decline in America. So the percentage of this country who are atheists or secular, non-practicing, they also uncover their head. So it's not only that the other religions are walking Begilei Rosh with uncovered head. That's just the standard of everyone. For Aleka Azeh Esa B'chukoseyim, then it's not a consideration. V'gam Pashanim Yasu Akam Chuk Shalehem L'achol Ezem and Advar Matov Ha'arun L'achila Lo Yasar Oso Amin L'achila. Let's say the government would say, everybody's obligated to eat a banana a day. What would you say? Oh, Jews can't eat bananas now. Chukoseyim Lo Selecho. The government legislated, everybody should have a banana a day. Of course not. Says Rav Moshe, if there's no religious reason, if there's no religious inspiration to what is being done by non-Jews, that doesn't rise to chukoseim lo seilechu. Chukoseim lo seilechu is when there is a religious background to it. Rav Schechter was here, he was discussing Thanksgiving in that context. What are the origins historically and what is the modern practice of Thanksgiving? Is there a religious component to it that it should be subject to chukoseim? Or is it simply promoting what is consistent with a Jewish value, which is being grateful? Rav Moshe also. Others were very machmir against Thanksgiving. Rav Moshe, I'm not saying that Rav Moshe sat down and had a turkey dinner. I'm not saying that he didn't. But I am saying that Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he says Thanksgiving is not a violation of chukoseim lo seilechu. There's no religious backing. As opposed to Halloween. Sadly, you'll see even Shomer Shabbos Jews who will, it's just fun, it's trick-or-treating, what's the harm, what's the problem? There is a strong religious, the fact that even most of the non-Jews who observe Halloween don't know the religious origin of it, doesn't make it, therefore, something which is acceptable for observant Jews. So Rav Moshe, very compellingly here, is writing, it says, Chukoseim lo seilechu doesn't mean anything non-Jews do. I'm wearing a tie. Why in the world should anyone be wearing this noose around their neck? I have no idea. But somebody once invented it and said, that's how you look professional, that's how you look formal, and you gotta wear a tie. And Jews say, that's how I find my individual expression. I have different ties for different days of the week. So is it also to wear a tie because non-Jews wear ties? Halavai. But it's not, as of yet. So we still have to wear the tie. Wear the tie. Why? So Rav Moshe would say, because there's no religious component to wearing the tie. Chukoseim lo seilechu is when there's a religious component. Umamela gama yeshiva b'gilei ha'rosh yadu alo. Non-Jews walk in the streets, more comfortable in the summer, not to have their head covered. To sit at home, it's more comfortable with their head covered. And even though you have the Taz, and therefore, America, Europa, Barosh Megula office. And everyone sitting with their head uncovered is simply for their own comfort, not for any other ulterior motive, certainly not for any religious motive or inspiration. If they let you wear a hat at work, wear a hat at work. If you can't wear the hat at work, then wear the hat when you leave. I am Bezeh Be'igras Moshe. And then he sends us to the other places. Also, Legalas Rosher, Kedei Lalechas, Le Theater, Ooh, Movies. He has another tshuva. He was asked, can you wear your yarmulke in the movies? that Moshe was asked. Can you wear your yarmulke in the movies?
Depends what movie.
Yeah, so that's another tshuva he has. What are you doing at the movies? But in those days, you know, cowboy film, what do you call it? It was a Western. It was hard to find what was objectionable in it. So then he has the question of wearing the yarmulke there in terms of the... So is it better to wear a yarmulke? So yeah, no, I've had that question through the years. I've had the question of people who are on a religious path of growth. And you'll see now, it's interesting. With the more anti-Semitism, you'll see, even traditional Jews who aren't observant will say, if they're telling me that I can't, then I'm going to show them I can. So I'll wear a yarmulke. So you'll have somebody who's not Shomer Shabbos wear a yarmulke. So then you have the following conundrum. I've had this asked of me, Rabbi, I want to wear a yarmulke. I'm a proud Jew. I want to show the world that we have nothing to be afraid of, nothing to hide, nothing to apologize for. I want to wear a yarmulke. I'm a proud Jew. But I drive on Shabbos. Should I wear my yarmulke while I drive? I want to wear a yarmulke. I'm a proud Jew. I'm a proud Jew. I want to wear a yarmulke. But I don't keep kosher. So when I'm eating in the restaurant, first of all, I get the question all the time in a work-related setting. I have a business meeting in a non-kosher restaurant. Better to wear the yarmulke or not wear the yarmulke? Business meeting in a non-kosher restaurant. So again, there are tshuvas that deal with that. And true, it's better if you can insist to meet in a kosher location, but very often you can't. Maybe you're in a place that doesn't have a kosher option. Maybe you're not the balabas in the meeting to determine where you're going. So are you allowed to have a glass of water, a Diet Coke? Can you have some raw fruit or raw cut up vegetables, non-insect ridden vegetables? So of course we'd be mekel in such a situation. So the observant Jew who in the business meeting is meeting at the non-kosher restaurant where they're only going to have an apple, they're only going to have a glass of water. Better to wear the yarmulke or not wear the yarmulke? You wear the yarmulke, it's marasayan that you're an observant Torah Jew eating at a non-kosher restaurant. You take the yarmulke off and someone sees you, it's marasayan that you took your yarmulke off and you're eating non-kosher in a non-kosher restaurant. What's the right thing to do? What's the better thing to do? Ask your local Orthodox rabbi. What is the halacha? So we saw that Rav Moshe is the mekel. Rav Moshe, I wouldn't call him the mekel, because he's really reflecting and representing the Ikar Adin, which is that it's a midas chasidus to wear yarmulke, and that chukosein lo selecha would not apply in our time. Can you not wear a yarmulke for the interview, and then once you get the job, put the yarmulke on at work? So you want to take away the bias. You want to take away the bias from the interviewer. So come to the interviewer and fit in just like anybody else. I'm not going to give you any reason to deprive me or deny me the job, because you're going to worry that I'm going to leave early on Fridays and how many Jewish holidays do I have. So I'm just going to come to you. I'll use my English secular name and I won't wear my yarmulke and I'll get the job. And when I show up the first day of work, I'll put my yarmulke on. What would be the problem? Genevas Das. So we have a halacha called Genevas Das. Source 19. The Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat tells us the following. Also, Laramos Benayodim Memekach Umemkar Olignav Daitam. You're not allowed to trick or fool somebody when it comes to business transactions, and you're not allowed to steal their opinion. If you have a defect in your property and the item that you're selling, then you need to be transparent and you need to share the defect, not only with your Jewish customers, with your non-Jewish customers. Now, I just want to point out, it's awkward for us in 2019 to be reading Afim Ha'akum. That doesn't sound so politically correct. Even with the Jewish customer, for sure you should tell him that it's defective. But even the non-Jewish customer, you should tell him. You have to understand, first of all, to be intellectually honest with halacha, there are differences in the halacha between the Jew and the non-Jew, which is not discriminatory to the non-Jew, but rather it's representing that the Jew is supposed to be our family. So what you'll represent to your brothers and sisters, to your own immediate family, would be different than how you would interact with a total stranger. And the Torah constantly is trying to reinforce that your fellow Jew is your nuclear family. I give this example all the time. There's a Torah prohibition to lend with ribbis. You're not allowed to lend with ribbis, you're not allowed to borrow with ribbis. The Yisr is both on the malve and the love. The lender and the borrower both violate the biblical prohibition if interest is charged. A non-Jew, charge interest. Not usury levels, but charge interest to the non-Jew. So why can't you charge interest to a Jew? So if it's immoral to charge interest, you shouldn't charge it to the non-Jew. And if it's moral to charge interest, and therefore you can charge it to the non-Jew, why can't you charge it to the Jew? So clearly it's moral to charge interest. And why is it clearly moral? Because there's something called the time value of money. The time value of money means when I have the money, I can be making money with my money. When you have my money, I can't make money with my money. So the amount of time that you have my money has a value to it. If I have $1,000, I can invest $1,000, I can buy things with the $1,000, I can get a return on the $1,000. There's a value. I spent the summer at Kellogg School of Management. I was in an advanced executive program for a month. I was the only member of the clergy or religious person, let alone rabbi. The dean emeritus who took Kellogg to number one business school in the country was a member of ours and invited me to attend the program. I learned an enormous amount. So much of it was relevant to a shul world, and I adapted it. From marketing, conflict resolution, all kinds of wonderful, wonderful things I learned. But the sessions that we had on inventory, not so much. I mean, there's only so many sidurim and chumashim that come through the shul. So, but I remember, you know, the way that you study in graduate school, the most effective way is case studies. You learn the principles, but then you look and analyze and you have a case study. And we studied companies and it was fascinating. So when it came to inventory, we studied Dell computers. I don't know if it's true now, but it was true then. That much of Dell Computers' income comes not from the sale of the hardware they're selling you, but if you buy a Dell computer, you pay the full amount, and they only pay their vendors 60 or 90 days later. So the money they're making off the money is an enormous percentage of their income. I don't know what percentage, I don't know if it's still true today, but they're making money off selling you the computer, but they're also making money off of having your money before they have to pay with your money. So there's a time value to money. There's a time value to money. If I have my $1,000, I can do all kinds of wonderful things with it, including making money from it. And if I lend you my $1,000, be gesund, but when you give me my $1,000 back 6 months later, I forfeited what I could have made in those 6 months. So is charging interest moral or immoral? It's absolutely moral. In fact, you can make the argument, I'm not even making money. I'm just breaking even by charging you interest. I could have made that money. Let's say I charge you the interest that I could have made in the bank if I left the money in the bank. I'm not really then even making money by charging you interest. All I'm doing is breaking even on the money my money could have made. So you can't call that immoral. So why is it forbidden to charge interest to a Jew? If it's moral, why can't I do it? So the Mefarshim, going back to the Rishonim, right, very simply. Because even it's moral, if a stranger knocks on my door and says, can I borrow $100? I say, look, I was going to make $10 off that $100. So if you want to borrow the $100, you can, but you got to give me back $110. But what happens if my brother calls me and says, hey brother, can I borrow $100? If I say, well, you got to pay me $110, I'm a lowlife. If your own family asks you for money and needs money, that's not who you make money off of, no matter how moral it would be. So what the Torah is doing by introducing the law of ribis is not trying to discriminate against the non-Jew and favor the Jew. What the Torah is reinforcing is the idea that every Jew is your brother or sister. The non-Jew is also a member of the greater family. But if my fifth cousin twice removed, whom I never met, calls me and says, can I borrow money? It's ethical to say, you got to pay me back interest. But if my brother calls me, if my own child says, can I borrow money? And I say to my child, yes, but you got to pay me back. No matter how moral the time value of money is, I'm a lowlife. So the Torah is reinforcing that with ribbis, don't be a lowlife. All of this is by way of saying, Afimu Akum is not telling you that we're discriminatory towards other religions, but it's telling you that the Jew is a member of our family, A. And B is, remember, that in 2019, when we talk about Af Akum, we're talking about our friendly business acquaintance. But for much, if not most, of Jewish history, when you said Afu Akum, you're talking about the person who was ready to do a pogrom, or exterminate you, or expel you, or exile you, or rob you, and so on. So when the halacha, certainly 16th century, the Shulchan Aruch is recording what the halacha is for an akum, it's not the friendly, secular, non-Jewish neighbor that we think of today. So the Shulchan Aruch is very clear that if there's a defect in the property, you're not allowed to fool the person. You have to be transparent because there's a concept of geneva's das. Don't sell non-kosher meat and say it's kosher. And then the Shulchan Aruch gives us an example. So you see that we have the principle of Geneva's Das. So going back, is it Geneva's Das to interview without the yarmulke and then wear the yarmulke once you get the job? Is that Geneva's Das? It's more than Gneivas Das.
Yes,
you think it's also
available. Gneivas Das is if you go into a store, look around, you know you're not going to buy anything. You're just going, you just look around, and the owner thinks you may buy something.
So Rav Moshe and the tshuva that we saw in source 16 referenced this. I don't know if you noted or picked it up in the question. And Rav Moshe said there that when he was asked, he was said, don't wear the yarmulke at the interview and maybe you could wear it later. And Rav Moshe seems to say that that would not be a problem of Gneivas Das in that circumstance. Sometimes there's a crime of omission and sometimes there's a crime of commission. You could lie about something and misrepresent something. If you're being interviewed and the person says, are you an Orthodox Jew? I don't know if that's legal. Probably not. But let's say it were legal, and they said, are you an observant Jew? Are you going to have to leave early Fridays? And you lie about it. That's a misrepresentation. That's a crime of commission. But a crime of omission would not necessarily rise to the same level of threshold and may not be something which is forbidden. So what about making a bracha without a yarmulke today? We saw that the Vilna Gaon and the Marshal, and we saw they all said it was okay. What about today? So the Shulchan Aruch, how do we conclude with all of these things? Shulchan Aruch records the following. Source 20. Also, Lilith Bakoma Zakufa, you're not allowed to walk around arrogant with your nose in the air. And don't walk around four amas, don't walk 6 feet with your head uncovered. You have to honor the presence of the Almighty. And a person shouldn't walk around Batashaktu if they are in a state that they need the restroom. And then the Shulchan Aruch records some best practices to maintain our digestive health. The Mishnah Berurah here comments, Arba Amos, you're not allowed to walk around four Amos. Umidas chasilas afilu pachas me'arba Amos. Mishnah Berurah says, in our day, don't even walk around less than 6 feet with your head uncovered. Vafilu beis hashena balayla. I mentioned this last time, a shlufkaf. But I wear one, my little son says a gute nacht on his special shlufkaf we get him in Israel. V'yesh mitzadad lomar dafilu arba Amos einu asam medina, rak la'atznuim b'maseim. Some say it's arrogant. Don't act like you're all that by not even walking around less than Dalet Amos with your head uncovered. We saw the Taz. Remember the Taz's reason was? So Taz says it's no longer Midas Chasidus. Today it's Me'ikar Adin. So even sitting in your recliner at home, reading the newspaper, you should make sure before you fall a shluff, and the newspaper ends up on the floor in a pile of your own drool, make sure you have a bobby pin so your yarmulke doesn't fall into that pile of drool with it. Young children, we know, maybe at their upshare, maybe earlier, maybe later, when they cognitively are able to understand that there's something and someone above them, one should habituate them, one should teach them, they should learn a discomfort walking around with their head uncovered. Now, what qualifies as Kisei Arosh? What's enough to be called Kisei Arosh? Is it enough to put your hand? Primogodim was of the opinion that when you're using a piece of your own body to cover your head, that's not called covering your head. Covering your head is with something external to you. If it's an extension of you, that's not called covering your head. That is the opinion of the Prima Gadim. Gilei Rosh, the Mishnah Berurah continues, certainly you shouldn't make a bracha with your head uncovered. V'adin lil moda b'gilei Rosh, nor should you learn that way. It's not enough to put your hand on your head. That's all part of one organic body. The body can't cover itself. Some say, in extenuating circumstances, then you can rely on it. What is an example of extenuating circumstance? In the middle of the night, you wake up, you need a drink, which is on your night table, and you're not wearing a shlufkaf, you don't have that yarmulke on your head that you sleep in. So then maybe then, in that circumstance, hand on your head would be enough. Take your sleeve and put it over your head, because that is external, your sleeve, and everybody would agree that even if you're wearing your sleeve, but your sleeve is external to you, can qualify as a yarmulke. Mishnah Berurah throws in, very important, you see this mistake. People will take off their yarmulke while they're tightening their shal rosh. So that means that at the moment that they're making the bracha, the yarmulke is suspended in the air. Because they're manipulating and maneuvering their yarmulke while putting on the shal rosh, The consequence, unintended consequence, but consequence nonetheless often is that a person is making the bracha on the Shel Rosh, Barosh Megula, with their head uncovered. So a person should be vigilant and careful that when you're coordinating, the brachas of the Shel Rosh are not easy. You have to make the bracha while it's loose, and then you tighten it, and then you say Baruch Shem. I think Rabbi Moskowitz gave a chabura on Baruch Shem this past Shabbos morning. So first you make the bracha, then you tighten it, and then you say Baruch Shem. So it's complicated when you're saying the bracha, when you're saying the Baruch Shem, the tightening. So make sure that your yarmulkes, where you're coordinating with your yarmulkes, make sure that you're not making a bracha on the Shel Rosh while your yarmulke is not on your head. Shulchan Aruch says elsewhere, source 22, so Siman Reish Vav, when you make a birchas anen and you make the bracha, and then you avoid a hefsek, there should be no interruption between the bracha and eating. You have to move your lips minimally, but preferably you should enunciate the bracha so that you hear it with your ears. You could say a bracha in any language. You shouldn't make a bracha while your erva is exposed. If a woman was unclothed but was sitting down, that in a way itself is a form of modesty, she could make the bracha. But but the Shonach concludes, if your heart sees your erva, so if you don't have some barrier between the top half and the bottom half of your body, then you should not make a bracha, which is the halacha of a gartel. We are assume if there's elastic to your underwear, if you're wearing pants with a belt, then you've been yotzei gartel. Those who wear a gartel for davening is not because they feel you're davening without the separation, but there's a separate din of hichon, of preparing for davening. It's a special preparation, a special beged for davening. But if you're, I mean, you need the gartel me'ikra din, I guess, if you don't have elastic to your underwear, you're not wearing a belt, a regular belt. But if you have both, then the reason for the gartel is to honor the tefillah. So a person has to have that separation. When I was in New Square many times, I used to spend a lot of time in New Square, so the Hasidim used to mock. It's a bayasta chasidim, we wear a gartel to separate the heart from the erva. Bayu misnagdim, you wear a tie, you separate the head from the heart. We separate the heart from the erva. You wear a tie, the gartel around your neck, to separate the head from the erva. It's a humor in New Square. Oh, Sharosha Magula Asalavarach, and the Shulchan Aruch concluded that if your head is uncovered, then you should not make the bracha. So Shulchan Aruch is paskening not like the Marshal, not like the Gra. The Marashal, we saw Shrai, that it's perfectly mutter, it's perfectly permissible, but the Shulchan Aruch is recording that the practice is one should cover their head to make a bracha. What about a toupee? If a man wears a toupee, does he need a yarmulke? Can a toupee constitute a yarmulke? Can the toupee constitute a yarmulke to make a bracha? So Rav Yaakov, they have a collection of his psak halacha called Emes LeYaakov. Emes LeYaakov and Chumash are his beautiful drushas in the Parsha. Collection of his Piskei Halacha, Emes LeYaakov on Shulchan Aruch. And here, in Siman Beis, Siv Vav, he quotes the Mishnah Berurah, Prok Misaros Afosan Shev Turim Bebegim Tachto V'yesh Lesum B'maris Ayin, Sheyomer Shesaros Hein V'yesh Mekilim. He says, if you have hair, which is separate, it's Maris Ayin, people won't know that your head is not uncovered. And then he quotes in the footnote, Rav Yaakov, excuse me, Pei Anachris L'Anoshim, to pay for men, so in terms of the Ema, the Yerushamayim, the not walking around Begilei Rosh, a toupee would qualify as having your head covered. But in terms of making a bracha, you have the Marasayan factor where someone sees you. So it depends, I guess, how bad your toupee is. If your toupee is really bad, so the only one you're fooling is yourself, and everyone else around you knows that you're wearing a toupee, so there's no Marasayan. Eat and drink and be merry, for everyone around you knows your head is covered. But if your toupee is so good that people will look and say that this yid is making a bracha with his head uncovered, then might be you'd have a problem. So Rav Yaakov distinguishes between the halach of Gilei Rosh, where wearing toupee is enough, and the halach of eating, where there's a marasai, what other people think.
So according to him, would you be allowed to wear the toupee?
Oh, Rav Moshe has another tshuva about putting tefillin over the toupee.
Where he's saying
that it really is. Yeah, so it's a head covering. So it's a head covering, then maybe it's a hefsek. Then maybe it's a chatzitza.
So, so you're not
Right, so maybe it's a chatzitza. So right, if it qualifies to avoid Gila Rosh, you're not Yotze if you put tefillin on top of your baseball hat. So maybe you shouldn't be Yotze if you put tefillin on. Rav Moshe, the other tshuva says, someone who wears a toupee should put tefillin on first in private without the toupee, to be Yotze the din of tefillin. And then for davening, could wear the tefillin over the toupee so that they're being, so it depends where, maybe the toupee is just in the middle. Maybe the straps go around on their real hair. Everyone should have their toupee fitted appropriately. Yes.
So if one were to make a bracha or to daven accidentally without a yarmulke on, do we have to?
You have to write a big donation to Boker Aton Synagogue. Now, if a person did, certainly they could rely on the marshal and the gra. Clearly, meikar adin. Clearly, strictly speaking, you could lechatchila make a bracha without a yarmulke. Times have changed, practice has changed, minhag Yisrael kedoshim have changed. So the Shulchan Aruch records, don't make a bracha today with your head uncovered. But if a person by accident did, and that's why, again, the Prima Gadol, even he would be lenient, that you could use your sleeve in those circumstances. Just hold on, I just want to... Yes?
Why
I don't wear... Okay, hold that question. Aruch HaShulchan says the following. In this time, if you went to court, in order to testify in court, Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein, 1829-1908, and here he reviews the halacha, and he throws in and he says everything we've seen, all the background that we discussed. Ha'inyan sharosh, right in the middle, after he says ayin sham. Ha'inyan, what is the whole origin of the yarmulke? Sharosh ba moach shu makor ha'chokhma va'yira ein lo lizgalos lefanav yizbarach shemali kol ha'aretz kvodo. Our brain, which contains our capacity for rational thinking, our intellect, it contains our awareness and awe. It would be inappropriate to reveal it, to leave it immodest in front of Hashem, who's Molei Haaretz Kvodo. K'mo she'en lamad b'makom kadosh b'gilei rosh, v'meina osakein, ozaz yitzra mezgaber alav. So the brazenness of your yitzra will overcome you, gam b'lo argasha. You won't even be aware of it. Says the Aruch HaShulchan in conclusion, however, in extenuating circumstances, k'mo ba'arkos, Hakir Shemedina de Malchusa. If you're in court, and if the rule in court is that you have to have your head uncovered, if you're unable to testify or you're unable to be in a court setting with your head covered, ain't Lelech Bekisa Rosh Besham Mutter, Akshalam Makam Hachar Mishirot Ladakos Biras Hashem Yishmer, Azemizah Vedai Lamevin, and so on. So the Aruch HaShulchan paskins, if you need to testify with your head uncovered, you would be allowed to. The Melamed Lahoel testifies as well, and paskins this way as well, and in the context of this psak, says something amazing. Says the Melamed Lahoel, tells us something fascinating. Source 25, Rav David Zvi Hafman. Yerushar Lishava Bar Koshala Megillah Rosh. Can you swear in court with your head uncovered? There are two questions. Number one is Gilei Rosh, could you appear with your head uncovered? And what's the second question? Even if you're not swearing, you're affirming. But you affirm in God's name. You're invoking God's name with your head uncovered. Is that permissible? And he says, Ein li panai laharach kais. I don't have time to answer right now. Can I get away with that in emails? A lot of gedolim used to write tshuvas. I don't really have time to evaluate. I don't have access to svarim. But anyway, Avayim Miknesa Gedola, so on and so forth. Make up a shas al chak. You can be lenient in extenuating circumstances. And then he writes the following. Look where I underline. Hine bekila kedosha yareim the Frankfurt amain. But besachinuch shiris yased meagon Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. Here he testifies in our community here in Germany in the school that was founded by Rav Hirsch. Shani ayisi morasham beishan vechetzi that I was on the staff for 2.5 years. Yoshvim atalmidim b'shar limud shara marim frias rosh v'rak b'shamas limud Torah mechasim rosham. Could you imagine a yeshiva today? Rav Hirsch's yeshiva in Germany, and he says, I taught there for 2.5 years. I'm giving personal testimony that in Rav Hirsch's yeshiva, for secular studies, they didn't wear a yarmulke. They sat bareheaded, and they only covered their head for limud kodesh. V'zenasha sham api takanas Rav Hirsch zatzal. The first time I came there with my head covered. Here in Germany, even the Jews have a practice. When you're going to the home of a dignitary, you uncover your head. The rector. So Rav Hirsch said, I'm not makbid for my own kavod, but I wouldn't want one of your colleagues to see that you came to my home and you didn't take your hat off and it looks like you're disrespecting the head of school. So you should know that in our yeshiva, we uncover our head for Limudei Chol, and we only cover our head for Limudei Kodesh, and I saw that myself. And Ein Bo Mishum B'chukoseyem, that was not a problem of B'chukoseyem, of what everyone else did. And maybe we'll share another time, I have extensive source sheets on examples through Jewish history of people with their head uncovered in different certain settings. In the Lubavitcher Rebbe Zatzal's passport picture when he came over. Later, more modern day, biographies of the Rebbe have photoshopped a yarmulke on his head because it'd be unimaginable that he wouldn't have a yarmulke on his head. He had no yarmulke on his head. How could he have a yarmulke on his head? It's told the story, I don't know if it's apocryphal, but the story is told that they came to Rav Huttner. Lubavitcher Hasidim came to Rav Huttner and they asked Rav Huttner, the Rav and the Rebbe were all in university together. And they asked Rav Huttner, is it true that our great Rebbe, he went through university and he had a 4.0, he graduated with flying colors. But isn't it true that he really sat in the back of the room and he was learning the whole time? He was able to both hear the professor and pass with a 4.0, but he wasn't really doing Bittul Torah, he was really learning the whole time. So if you knew Rav Huttner was very, very sharp. There are some great lines, like you have the Kutzker and you have great lines from Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner says, for example, about the Septuagint. The Gemara tells us it was a miracle. They had 70 rabbis. They separated them into 70 different rooms, told them to translate the Torah into Greek, and all 70 translated it the same way. To which Rav Huttner observed, it would have been a better miracle if they were in the same room and translated it the same way. That would have been a bigger miracle. Right? The halacha says, Tov ma'at b'kavana meharbe shelo b'kavana. Better to daven a little bit with kavana than say a lot without kavana. To which Rav Huttner said, Tov Rav Huttner has very sharp lines. So when the Hasidim came and said, isn't it true that our Rebbe was learning the whole time? Rav Huttner said, it's impossible. And they said, what do you mean it's impossible? He said, your Rebbe would never have been learning with his head uncovered. Meaning that they sat in university, the Rebbe, Rav Huttner, the Rav, that was the appropriate, that's how they sat with their head uncovered, because that was what was done. And here's an example, the Zichron Yehuda, source 26. He lived 1270 to 1349. He was asked also about this, making a bracha with your head uncovered. V'davar shetibula b'mashke, ha'yamatzach netila, omnam ne'am achlokas, tov shalolavarach, b'chomak sh'esavik brachos ha'shimot, and so on and so forth. And then he says, at the end, he says, sometimes it's so hot, what could you do? You could learn with your head uncovered. It'd be better for your learning to wear a yarmulke while you learn. But if it's so hot, they didn't have air conditioning in the 13th century. 13th and early 14th century. If you're so uncomfortable, then learn with your head uncovered. But if you're so hot, then you can learn with your head uncovered. Otherwise, it's really best to learn with your head covered. I was asked, someone who listened to the shiur online emailed me, could I mention exercise? What about exercising without a yarmulke? So again, if you followed the development of the halacha the way we've seen it, that it's really a midas chasidus today, in theory, if you were very, very, very hot and sweating up a yarmulke inappropriately, let's say you're on a stationary bike and you want to not wear a yarmulke, in theory, meikar adin it be mutter, but it seems to be that the universal practice today is to try to always wear a yarmulke. We saw the Mishnah Berurah, even less than Dalet Amos, midas chasidus, it's nice, less than Dalet Amos. However, Meikar Adin, even the Mishnah Berurah records, one would not need to wear the yarmulke. I would say that we're living in a time, and we'll end here, but I'll refer you to the last two articles. We're living in a time where Jews are in places that it's no longer safe to wear a yarmulke. And for we who are in places that it is safe to wear a yarmulke, we should not hesitate. We should wear our yarmulke with pride. We should wear our yarmulke as our uniform. We should wear our yarmulke. Every group in America today has their logo or their emblem, has their sign or their symbol that's associated with them. And we shouldn't be shy or shamed or embarrassed about our sign or symbol. It's our yarmulke. I wrote an article, sources 19 and 20. It's an old article that I wrote, but I included within it the story of Jeffrey Swartz. His parents live here and often are at our shul. The former CEO of Timberland, who was is an observant Jew. And he's described in this article that came out. In a recent article about him, he's described Jeffrey Swartz's appearance as misleading. The former president and CEO of footwear company Timberland is an affable Jew with a yarmulke, and as far as you can get from the rugged look of the shoes he sold until recently, and so on and so forth. Affable Jew with a yarmulke. That is his description. The CEO, former CEO, of the great company Timberland. We shouldn't hesitate, we shouldn't hide, we shouldn't be ashamed or resist. We should recognize the value, the significance, and the blessing of the opportunity to wear a yarmulke with pride. Have a great day.